You are attending, as I noted earlier, you're attending one of the sessions of the Health and Equity Caucus. Okay. My name is Gilbert Ojeda. I'm the Program Director for California Program on Access to Care. We've been working closely with the caucus over a number of years, I'm not even sure how many, to do these sessions around health equity, health access. This particular session has a California tinge to it, but at the same time we want to learn from the grandfather of these programs in Massachusetts. And we usually try to have somebody representing the respective state of each of our sessions. Our theme is the how to enroll the hard to reach under ACA, lessons from California. But we're going to begin the session with a presentation from Massachusetts and their efforts to do that enrollment, continuing efforts, but also their initial efforts. Our presenter today is Brian Rossman, who's the research director for a group called Healthcare for All, the leading policy advocacy organization that we just understand actually has a linkage with our own health advocacy organization in California, a group called Health Access. He is dedicated to expanding access, quality care, affordable health care in Massachusetts. And I heard an interesting factoid about a year ago at APHA saying one of the things that motivated Massachusetts to do what they did is that the health care costs in Massachusetts is the highest in the world. Okay, and people don't understand quite why the bipartisan approach was taken initially in Massachusetts, but when you look at that fact, if you will, you say, well, something's got to be done. And they said something's got to be done, just as the nation back in 2010 finally said that something has to be done. Brian also teaches health policy in the Master's of Public Health program at Brandeis, has advanced degree nursing students at Regis, lectures regularly at the University of Massachusetts Medical School, and he's before joining Healthcare for All in 2003, he was a policy associate at the Snyder Institute for Health Policy at Brandeis, and actually worked with the legislature. Okay. As part of the Joint Committee on Healthcare for the Massachusetts Legislature, in which I think that was the timing of just before.
During the
Medicaid expansion, right. So without further ado, I'm going to ask Brian to come up and start this day off. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much, and it's great to be here. How many folks are from Massachusetts? A few. Hi. So for all of you who are not from here, welcome to the Romney Care State. Basically, I'm going to talk about your future and maybe even your present, depending on the kind of work you're doing. When I first sort of conceived of this, I put up the state capitals because I thought this would be valuable to policymakers in working for states. But then I thought it's also valuable to people working in state exchanges, and I found some exchange logos to put up. By the way, we're not supposed to call them exchanges, we're supposed to call them marketplaces. So these are state marketplaces. And remember, there's both the state marketplaces and the federal marketplace, which covers about half the states that don't have their own. And the challenge is, how do we enroll millions and millions of people who are now uninsured or underinsured into new coverage? And I think when we scheduled this session, we thought this was an important topic. With all the news of the website and the if you can keep your plan, if you like your plan, you can keep it. I think this has moved from being an important topic to a really vital topic that we all want to talk about. So I want to talk about Massachusetts. Real quickly, no financial issues. Where I work, just so you know where I'm coming from, Healthcare for All, we're like the voice of consumers and patients in state healthcare policy. We work with a national group called Community Catalyst. You may have heard of Community Catalyst, or a lot of Community Catalyst folks here in the conference doing their own presentations. We work on Massachusetts. They work on national stuff, and we work very closely together. We form policy coalitions that include community groups, public health groups, provider groups, religious groups, labor groups, to work on health access, on cost control, on oral health, on children's health, on mental health, on prescription drugs, and that's how we do most of our work in coalitions with other groups. We also operate a helpline that gets over 1,000 calls a week, and our helpline really informs our policy advocacy. It's a nice interplay between the helpline and our policy work. We work closely together. And this is our website if you want to look us up. So I want to take us back, April 2006. The law is passed. You can see the bill being signed by our then governor, Mitt Romney. Looking over his shoulder is Ted Kennedy. And around the table are a bunch of state politicians. Some are Democrats, some are Republicans. And here in Massachusetts, it was always called Chapter 58. That was the boring name for this new health law that passed in 2006. Until a few years later, and all of a sudden there was something called Obamacare, and our law all of a sudden morphed from being Chapter 58 to being called Romneycare. But nobody called it Romneycare here in the beginning. But I want you to see this tableau because it's a famous picture. Most people, you know, see the close-up picture. You see this platform here that the governor is on? The reason they built this is an historic Faneuil Hall. It's just not too far from here. This is where the American Revolution started, where the Patriots planned all their revolutionary activity. And the governor used this hall. It's the only bill signing he did here when he was governor. They had to build this platform because he had two high-def camera crews filming the bill signing for the Romney for President commercials that, of course, never ran, but that's another story. But I was there that day, and it was very optimistic, and we all were so proud of the work that we had done together, consumers and providers and insurers and the business community and the medical community had all come together to pass a law that we hope would lead to universal health coverage or near universal health coverage. And the way we were going to do it was not some dramatic reshaping of the healthcare system, but build on the current private healthcare system by expanding Medicaid, by giving sliding scale subsidies for private coverage, and by reorganizing the insurance market so particularly for small business and for individuals, they had a good way to buy insurance. And that's what we did in Massachusetts. This was the result, you know, years later. The top line is the uninsurance rate in the U.S., around 15-16%, more or less. The bars at the bottom are the uninsurance rate in the state of Massachusetts, going from about 7% down to 2 or 3%. 2011 is a little higher than 2010, from 2.0 to 3.1. That's not just for you scientific folks. That's not a statistically significant difference. That's just sampling issues. So it's roughly 2 to 3% uninsured in Massachusetts right now compared to 15-16% in the country. So you can see we were enormously successful in Massachusetts in getting almost everybody covered, and I'll talk a little bit later about who's not covered. But when I show these statistics, I just want you to remember these are real people, lots and lots of real people. And because we have a helpline, we at our and where I work get connected to these stories. This is one guy who called our helpline. He was diagnosed with cancer. He didn't know what to do. He couldn't afford to pay for health insurance. He called our helpline right after the RomneyCare program started. We signed him up into coverage. We got him enrolled. This allowed him to get his follow-up treatment. It allowed him to get his radiation. And he's just one of thousands and thousands, roughly 400,000 newly insured in the state of Massachusetts out of a state of 6 million. So all of these statistics are real stories. One important caveat, this goes back to the presidential campaign. Romney is looking at RomneyCare and his twin Obamacare, and Romney is saying, your kid is ugly, to Obama. We have to be careful. There's a common perception that the Obamacare law and the RomneyCare law are identical, and they're not identical. They're based on the same template. They're based on the same kind of policy approach, but the details are very different. So I'm going to show you what happened in Massachusetts and how we got so many people covered and what the strategies were. The ACA is not identical to the Massachusetts plan, and there's some important differences. And we'll have time during questions to talk about whatever you want to talk about Massachusetts versus the ACA, if you guys want to talk about that. But we need to keep in mind that they're not identical. So this is how enrollment proceeded in Massachusetts in the first 18 months. From the bottom is Medicaid. And what we did in Massachusetts, unlike the ACA, was a phased approach. So the law was signed in April of 2006. Starting in July 2006, the Medicaid expansion took place. And we eventually enrolled, this is after 18 months, about 90,000 people into Medicaid. Of those 90,000 newly enrolled in Medicaid, only about 20,000 were newly eligible because of the law. The bulk of those that we enrolled were people that were always eligible, could have enrolled before but didn't, and all the hoopla and all the energy that I'm going to talk about was one reason why they enrolled, because there was a lot of attention paid to coverage. So this is a side benefit of expanding Medicaid, is we're going to get a lot of people that are already eligible. So that started in July of 2006. In October of 2006, the state started enrolling people into the Commonwealth Care Program, which was our adult sliding scale subsidy private coverage program. The first group to get enrolled was a group of people that were on our state charity care program called the Uncompensated Care Pool, where the state already knew their income and knew their immigration status, knew their family size and all the rest, and could compute their federal poverty level, and the state just auto-enrolled a lot of those. So those early enrollees, the early success of Massachusetts, was not through people signing up on their own, but the state using what it knows to sign people up. And this is an important strategy to be used all over the country to take, for example, SNAP enrollees or WIC enrollees or other programs and auto-enroll them into coverage. And that's something that we can talk about later. Then starting in January of 2007, the state started enrolling premium-paying people into the Commonwealth Care Program. And in July of 2007, premium-paying people into what was called Commonwealth Choice, which was unsubsidized coverage. If you add it all together, it was very impressive. In the first 18 months, we enrolled over 275,000 people. What this leaves out is expanded employer coverage. So more employers started offering coverage as well in Massachusetts, and more workers started signing up for the employer coverage, and that's how we got to about 400,000, not after 18 months, but after about two and a half to three years, we had 400,000 covered. So you can see the slope is pretty steep. But in the beginning, it was slow. And when people are criticizing the ACA today, there was a report that came out yesterday that said only two people signed up in the first day. You know, in Massachusetts, we only had 123 folks in the first month. These are excluding the auto-enrollees, but the people who had to choose to sign up for the Commonwealth Care Program. So it took a while, and the vast majority of people signed up at the very end. And so I would counsel some patience and some optimism with the ACA. It's going to take a while to get the message out, and people are lazy, or people, maybe lazy is not the right word, but people take their time and they're not going to enroll, I think, until it gets closer to the deadline for the penalties. So what did we do in Massachusetts? How did we get so many people to enroll so quickly? There was two strategies. There were top-down strategies, and there were bottom-up strategies. And I want to talk about both, but of course I want to emphasize the bottom-up strategies because I think that was crucial. But the top-down strategies were pretty interesting. I think a lot of people have been aware who are in this business about the partnership that the state made with the Red Sox team. Now, Red Sox is a religion in Massachusetts. It's not just a baseball team. This is something that we live and die with. And 2007 was a very lucky year for them to pick a partnership with the Red Sox because that happened to be a World Series year. And if, you know, maybe two-thirds of the population pays attention to baseball in a typical summer, in a World Series year, it goes up to maybe 95%. So everybody's paying attention to the Red Sox. But the state did an interesting focus group and learned a lot. They had some baseball players cut some ads saying, I'm a baseball player, I'm a star, you know, you guys got to have health insurance. It's really important if you want to stay healthy, you got to have health insurance. And what they found is people had little identification, didn't really relate to some millionaire baseball guy telling them they had to have health insurance. Then they recut some new ads, and these new ads had the ticket takers and the groundskeepers and kind of used the aura of the Red Sox rather than the baseball players, and that was much more effective. It was the team and the real working-class people that were part of the team that they used in the ads and not the baseball players. In addition, they did some survey research, and they looked at what would encourage somebody to get health insurance, and that they found that for women, The issues were preventive care and annual checkups and maternal health. That was all good for women. But for men, none of that worked. Men are not interested in preventive care. They're not interested in annual checkups. For men, you had to scare them about the risk of an accident. So the guy up here on the left in the cast, he was the star of the TV ads that they ran. He said, hey, it could happen to you, and he showed up his cast. Interesting story. The actor that they picked to do this role, they had him come and they put him in a fake cast. They had him do his lines. When he was done filming the commercial, he said, what is this health insurance thing? Because I'm uninsured. I'm just an actor. I don't have health insurance. And they signed him up right there for the plan. What they got people to understand about health insurance, one is you could have an accident. They had kind of two approaches. The bottom of the guy falling off the ladder, it says avoid tax penalties. This is the individual mandate penalties. This is the other ad that they have. I don't know if you can see in the green box. It says what it could cost you if you don't have health insurance. Broken arm, $2,600. Broken leg, $11,000. Appendectomy, $14,000. What they found was people have no idea whatsoever what health care costs. People assumed it was a few hundred dollars. People had no idea how expensive it would be. And so letting people know about the cost of health care if you had an accident was one way of reaching the men. The other thing, and this is an APHA special just for you guys, just so you know, the ad here with the bicycle accident, so the bicycle riders in Boston area complained that this was showing bicycle riding in an unfair light. And, you know, this is Massachusetts, right? So they pulled the ad. They didn't want to have the anti-bicycle riding ad. The other thing they did is, of course, scare people a little bit about the tax penalties. This was a postcard they sent out to everybody in the state. Act now to avoid tax penalties. And the bulk of the sign-ups, as I said, occurred right before the deadline at the end of December, before the tax penalty kicked in January of 2008. So this statewide advertising campaign, and most of it was aimed at working class neighborhoods. They had a lot of bus ads and transit ads. They had some TV and radio. They had a lot of Spanish language radio as well. That created awareness, but to get people to actually sign up, it was the community outreach. And that was the work that we think is most important, not just the top down, but the bottom up. This is somebody who was doing the outreach, and I just love this quote. She said, the purpose of outreach is to have a person explain the convoluted way insurance works or how to get access to a doctor. It is very different from advertising. Billboards or TV ads cannot be individualized. And I think that's really the message I want you guys to take away from this, is it was the individualized one-on-one assistance. So in Massachusetts, the state gave grants to 51 community groups and healthcare groups to work on outreach issues and to really work in the community. And these are some of the groups that got the grants. The grants program in our Massachusetts was $3.5 million. 30 community health centers got money, 17 community organizations, 4 hospitals. The people who got the grants spoke 20 languages. And the state provided initial training. And then there were quarterly meetings. Every 3 months they had another meeting of all the groups getting outreach grants around the state for updates on what was going on. And I used to speak at those meetings. It was a lot of fun, the energy, the enthusiasm, particularly in the early days. And what they found is that those groups that were doing that personalized outreach had two somewhat distinct roles. The first was community education, just teaching people about the issues, and then was one-on-one enrollment assistance. What they found is the form to sign up was made very simple and much less complicated than the old Medicaid forms. But it still stymied a lot of people. It was still, people just were put off and they thought it was too complicated. And they needed help. The other thing they found is even if somebody that was well-educated knew the system, it would take me half an hour to fill out a medical eligibility form. If somebody's helping you, they can ask the questions in the right way. They know how to do it. Our helpline counselors can do it in 7 minutes flat with a client on the phone. So it's much quicker also when you get help. The state did a study after the grants were out to see what did the groups do that got the grants. And what they found is some common strategies and then some strategies that a lot of groups were doing, but not all the groups, and then some very unique strategies that just a few groups were doing. The common strategies were just what you would expect, going to community events and health fairs, handing out flyers and brochures, speaking at schools, speaking at social service agencies. They had a lot of work with churches. That was very important. The less common strategies were work in the media. Some of these local groups did local media. For example, in Western Massachusetts, where it's pretty rural, they stuck in flyers in the weekly newspapers that everybody read. They did small business outreach. Some groups did door-to-door, which is what the Enroll America group is doing now, phone calls, giveaways, and so on. The really unique strategies, I think, are most interesting. And what's most interesting here is groups figured out for themselves what worked. There wasn't much state direction. They said, figure out how you can get to people where they are and talk to people in their language. So some of the interesting things is they put inserts in cocktail napkins at bars. They did outreach to accountants, speaking at farmers markets, libraries, hair salons. I love this picture. This is a beauty shop in southeastern Massachusetts. I don't know if you can see the pink sign in the corner there. Here's a blow-up. It says, do you need health insurance? Call PACE. And I think a lot of you know that beauty salons are a great way to reach folks. So who got signed up? And this is really important. Who's left out? So this was a study done on enrollment by a race and ethnicity. And you can see there's still disparities, but bigger improvements, particularly among Hispanics. So the first bar is the total people, is everybody in the state. The red is before, the blue is after. This is measuring enrollment, insurance coverage. If you look at the next bar, that's non-Hispanic whites. They had a real improvement, a few points in their coverage. If you go to Hispanics, which is the next bar, it was a much bigger improvement. They started off lower, but they gained more. And then this survey that I was part of, the research team, divided the Hispanics into English-speaking and Spanish-speaking. So if you look, the next one over is Hispanic, is English-speaking Hispanics. So they had a much greater improvement than non-Hispanic whites. But the last group, the Spanish-speaking Hispanics, they started off at the lowest place. They grew the most improvement in coverage status, but still ended up much lower. And what this report did, which was published in Health Affairs 2 years ago, they tried to adjust for education and for age and for income. And if you do that, the English-speaking Hispanics end up looking like the non-Hispanic whites, if you do those adjustments. But the Spanish-speaking Hispanics are still significantly behind. And that gives us a kind of a tool into our next presentations, but something to think about as to where the most need is going to be in those immigrant communities. One last thing. The groups that did this work did more than just sign people up. It wasn't just pure enrollment. They also had to explain to uninsured people how to use their coverage. If you've never had insurance, you have to understand the primary care system, how managed care works, about referrals. If you're used to going to the emergency room all the time for your care, this is a new experience. They also taught people how to keep their coverage, how to report to the state variations in income and family size, how to renew your coverage, and they just dealt with other issues like food assistance, housing assistance, heating assistance, and so on. So the state study that looked at this was their conclusion, and I think this will lead nicely to our next speakers. They concluded that outreach workers reside in the communities they serve and or mirror their clients' cultural and linguistic characteristics, and that's what I'd want to underline. This contributes to their ability to build trust, easing the way for engaging clients and getting the assistance to which they're entitled. And so the lesson I want to leave you with is we did it in Massachusetts. We did it from both a top-down and a bottom-up strategy. And the key to the bottom-up strategy was getting people, outreach workers, who spoke the language of the people they were signing up, both in a figurative sense and even in a literal sense. So thank you.
I'd like to take the opportunity to take a couple of questions.
Great.
Okay?
Yeah, you're first.
I know this isn't really
I can talk about anything you want.
How much does Massachusetts have to change what they've done
yeah.
to comply with
yeah.
the ACA?
We thought it would be a moderate amount. One of our state officials said, you know, other states have to build a brand new house. Here in Massachusetts, we just have to do a renovation. I said, oh, my God, renovations are so much harder. Who wants to do a renovation? It's been complicated, actually, for Massachusetts to fit into the new standard. But it's going to allow more people to get coverage. Our subsidies go to 3 times the poverty level. The ACA goes to 4 times the poverty level. There's some other things. Also, for state taxpayers, we've been paying for a lot of this with state money. Now we're going to get federal money. So that's, you know, good for us as well at the state level.
And do you do away with the state tax penalty now?
Yep. No, actually. So we had an interesting decision. And the state decided to keep the state individual mandate to have a way of enforcing our stronger standards on what minimum insurance benefits. And so people who comply with the federal standard but not the state standard will still owe a penalty to the state of Massachusetts. And that was a quite interesting decision that we strongly supported. There won't be double penalties. If you owe both penalties, you subtract the state from the federal or the one from the other. So you don't stack them up. Yeah. Sure. Here and then here. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, you know, they had to translate into a language that people understand. And often the official translations they found were very poor. Now, the official translations were only in Spanish. In Massachusetts, actually, we have more Brazilian Portuguese speakers than Spanish speakers. And so we hired a bunch of people whose native language was Brazilian Portuguese to talk, you know, to figure out how to translate materials into those languages. But what we found is one-on-one trust building and one-on-one talking. You can't do it in a big group very well, and you can't do it certainly in a broadcast medium or advertising. It was a lot of one-on-one conversations about, now you're going to get a card in 2 weeks. Once you have that card, we picked out a primary care doctor together. The next thing I want you to do is make an appointment with that primary care doctor. If you have trouble making an appointment, call us back. We'll help you do that. That was the kind of thing that people did. You know, it's a great question. There hasn't been studies. I don't know. Overall, the percent of people in Massachusetts that say they have a regular place for care went up about 15%, even higher than the coverage went up. So we think we did better on that score. When you look at it by race and ethnicity, there's still disparities. But like everything we did, the disparities got less. They still exist, but they got less.
One more
question. Yeah, please, yeah.
Who's
still uninsured in Massachusetts? So there's a group of undocumented folks who we provide a charity care system that is okay if you live in the Boston region or near a big hospital in Springfield or Worcester, but not so good in the medium good if you live in rural areas. So some are undocumented. It's hard to enumerate. There's not good surveys, obviously. People with unaffordable employer coverage right now are left out. So if your employer offers you coverage and you can't afford it, you're not eligible for help from the state and you can't get your employer coverage. That will change in January when the ACA comes. And then there are folks who just don't want to have insurance. We have a lot of Christian Scientists in our state. We're the world headquarters of the Christian Science Church. That's a small part of it, but a larger part of it is people who just for whatever reason either don't know for cultural reasons or don't want it because they don't want it. It isn't a lot of people, as you can see.
Right. Now, we're going to have time, hopefully, at the end of the session to raise more questions.
Thanks for your question.
But thank you very much.
Yeah.
Did we give him a hand or not?
Thank you.